Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1322, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer, Amna Bhutta. Amna Bhutta was born in Karachi, Pakistan, in April of 1993. She is the youngest child and the only girl of four siblings. Her parents envisioned a quality education for their children and moved the family to Canada from Pakistan when Amna was 11 years old. She started grade 6 here and today majors in political science at university. Amna still watches Tom and Jerry. She loves to read and often writes in her journal before going to bed. She mostly listens to country and rock alternative music. She loves Chinese cuisine and a lot of chocolate. People find her quiet and shy, but she is the loudest person in her family. In her free time, Amna watches movies, reads, cooks, bakes, and spends quality time with her family and best friend, Nizma. Amna Bhutta's quiet, almost gentle writing belies the weightiness of her poignant stories. In tonight's first story, set in Karachi, Pakistan, a little girl and her cousin slip out of the house and away from their mothers during an afternoon nap to visit a nearby playground. Let's listen now as Amna Bhutta reads her story, The Seesaw, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Seesaw by Amna Bhutta. The apartment is quiet, except for the sound of the clock ticking. Everyone naps. Grandma forces me to bed with her every day when the digital clock reads 3:00. Nizma, my cousin and best friend, sleeps in the guest room with her mom. She stays with us during summer vacations. Many people in Pakistan take naps in the afternoon. Grandma snores. I move her hand away from my stomach and quietly slip out of bed. My heart beats fast. I crawl to the guest room door, stand on my tippy toes, and turn the knob. The door screeches open. A cool breeze from the air conditioner touches my face. Nizma's mom looks to be in deep sleep. Nizma peeks at me with half eyes open. She nods her head and smiles. I smile back. I get down on my knees and crawl to the dining room. I hide under the table and wait. A moment later, Nizma shows up. Amna, she whispers. Nizma, let's go outside. The sun is still up. I think we should go out and play right now. I think all the other children are playing outside too, she says. Let's go. We giggle and crawl out from under the table. We wear our favorite Minnie Mouse pajamas. My ponytail hangs lopsided and her half braid falls loosely over her shoulder. We tiptoe to the front door, put on our sandals, unlock the door, and step outside. Nizma and I sit on the stairs railing and slide down. No children play outside. We decide to go to the playground nearby and find that our favorite swing is broken. We look at the seesaw. The seat covers are broken. We sit down on them anyway. Our bums hurt. The hot metal handles on the seesaw metal burns our hands. Nizma's face turns red from the heat. Sweat drizzles down her forehead. You push the seesaw down on your side first, I say to Nizma. All right, she says and pushes down. My feet dangle as I start to rise. The ground below me looks far away. My heart beats fast. I start to drop, and when my feet hit the ground, the broken seat cover pinches my bum. I do not complain. Now Nizma is up in the air. She frowns. I push my feet against the ground and start moving up in the air again. Nisma lands on the ground with her eyes shut tight. She scratches her bum. She does not complain. I think we should go home now, Nisma says after some time. I think so too, I say. We balance the seesaw, hop off, and leave the park. We pick lilies from a garden on our way back home. We race each other up the stairs to the apartment. As usual, Nisma wins. Our parents wait for us at the top. Dad glares at me. He motions for us to go inside the apartment. I bite my fingernails. A lump grows inside my throat. Dad and Nisma's father take us by the hand to the living room. Dad sits down on a sofa. My uncle sits on the opposite sofa and Nisma stands in front of him. They're only 6 years old, Mom whispers to my aunt, who shakes her head in disappointment. What if something happened to them? My older brother, Saad, walks in the living room with a grin on his face. I turn around and see Nisma's dad asking her a lot of questions. She looks down with a sad face. I turn back to Dad and stare up into his worried, angry eyes for the longest time. Finally, he speaks. What were you thinking?
That was The Seesaw, written and read by Amna Bhutta. In tonight's second story, a child befriends an old beggar, ignoring her mother's warning to stay away from him. Every day, she saves a few rupees from her lunch money to place in his bowl, until he disappears after her visiting cousins make disparaging remarks. Let's listen now as Amna Bhutta reads her story, Fakir.
Fakir by Amna Bhutta. An old fakir sits outside my building every day. The beggar, with long curly white hair, mustache, and a dark complexion, wears a ragged black shalwar kameez. He holds a steel bowl in his hands. Karachi, Pakistan, boils in the 50-degree heat. The school bus jostles. I drink the last drop from my water bottle. 30 minutes later, we approach my apartment complex. I jump off the bus. The fakir sits at the side of the entrance gate. Sweat drizzles down his forehead. He squints, looks at me, and then looks away. I enter the gate. Please give me something in the name of God, he says in a low-pitched voice. My children are starving. I turn around and see a couple pass him by. They offer nothing. I wonder how he bears sitting in this heat. How does he survive? I let my backpack slip to the ground and search for money in the front pocket. I find the 10 rupees I saved from lunch. I walk up to the fakir. Up close, he looks scarier. The curly white hair frames his face. Fine lines cross his forehead. Bushy eyebrows grow over his brown eyes. He smells of old clothes, cigarettes, and sweat. His bare feet are dirty. The fakir looks at me, but stays silent. I drop the 10-rupee note into his bowl and hurry away. May you always stay happy, kid, he shouts after me. I run. I want to get home. I need to reach somewhere safe. I rush to the third floor of my apartment building and pound on the door. Mom answers and lets me in. I charge to my bedroom, toss my backpack on the floor and sit down on the rug beside my bed. "You did not take off your shoes," Mom shouts. I curl my legs up to my face and wonder why I ran away from the fakir. I remember dinner. I get up off the floor and go to the washroom. I wash my hands and make my way to the dining room. The pedestal fan beside the table cools me down. I pull the button so that it only faces in my direction. Mom puts dinner on the table. Chicken curry, my favorite. "Mom, this beggar in front of the gate, he seems strange," I say. "Yeah, beggars are like that," Mom responds. "They're all strange and weird." "Well, he seemed to be in need, so I gave him 10 rupees today." "You did what?" Mom yells. She steps towards me and sits down. "Who told you to go near him?" I stare down at my food. "Amna, you're not to go near him again. It is not safe. I'm going to tell your father. You understand?" "You understand," she presses. "Yes, Mom, I'll not go near him again." The next day, I see the fakir again when I step off the school bus. He sits at the same place and in the same position. He looks at me as if he was expecting me. I ignore him. He stares. What if he was waiting for me to give him something, I wonder? What if he wishes something bad upon me if I don't give him anything? I walk up to him and drop 2 rupees note into his bowl. I walk up to him and drop 2 rupees into his bowl. I save the rest to buy French fries at school tomorrow. "Always be happy, kid," he says again. I walk home. I do not tell Mom. I give the fakir 2 rupees every day after school, and each time he repeats the same line, "Always be happy, kid." One day he catches me off guard. "What's your name, kid?" he asks. I stop and look at him. He motions me to come near. My heart beats fast. I approach until I stand only inches away. He asks my name again. "Amna," I say. "That's a very nice name." His face lights up for the first time. "My daughter's name is Amna as well." I stare at him. "Thank you, kid. Always stay happy. Always be blessed in your life." I crack my knuckles. I scratch my nose. My eyes rest upon a brown journal by his side. The cover is missing. The journal looks dirty and torn. I read the title on the first page. Life. "You're like a flower, kid. Innocent and naive," he continues. "Adults are filled with ego and arrogance. I hope your innocence always remains within you." I utter, "Thank you." Nothing else comes out of my mouth. I walk home. Thoughts flood my mind. I wonder how he can be a beggar when he knows how to write. I wonder what he has written in his journal. I wonder about his name. I wonder where he lives and what he eats. I wonder about his family and especially his daughter, Amna. I wonder if she could be my age. I want to ask him so many questions, but I don't. Mom told me to stay away from him. The next day, I get an early release from school. When I get off the bus, I don't see the fakir near the entrance gate. I walk home. My older cousins Bilal, Lena, and Danny are visiting. we decide to buy ice cream at the local market. We step outside the gate. The beggar sits at his usual spot. He glances at me and smiles. I look away. His smile fades. My cousins notice him. "Ew, I hate fakirs," Bilal says. The old man listens. "These beggars pretend to be helpless and take money from people," Lina says. "And they smell bad too," Danny adds. I want to disappear. I want to stop my cousins. But if I do, I fear Mom will find out that I talked to him. The fakir looks down. He presses his hands together. "Let's go to the store," Lina says and pulls my arm. We buy ice cream. The strawberry ice cream tastes horrible. The next day, I save all 10 rupees for the old man. On the way back from school, I wish the bus would reach home faster. When I hop off, I see no sign of the fakir. The market flourishes. Guards stand near the gate. People stroll down the road. Nobody seems affected by his absence. I search for him for as far as my eyes can see. I wait near the gate for 15 minutes. My face burns from the sun. The 10 rupee note rolled in my palm feels wet. I wait longer. He doesn't appear. I straighten the note and blow on it. I find a small brick near the gate. I walk up to the spot where the fakir usually sits. I lay the note flat on the ground. I place the brick on top of it. I walk home.
That was Fakir, written and read by Amna Bhutta. Our next story brings us to a Canadian classroom where the narrator, newly arrived from Pakistan, feels ostracized from her elementary schoolmates and becomes the victim of a racist prank when school is let out. Let's listen now as Amna Bhutta reads her story, One Day at Centennial.
One Day at Centennial by Amna Bhutta. Mom wakes me up at 7 in the morning. The sun beams down on me through the window. I want to go back to sleep. Mom drags me out of bed and walks me to the washroom. I take a long time. I hope somehow to stay home from school for the day. "Amna, get out already," Mom shouts from outside the door. "You will be late for school." I brush my teeth, change into clothes, and amble to the kitchen for breakfast. I eat my cereal slowly. I dawdle putting on my shoes. I wish I could stop the clock. "Don't forget to take your lunch with you," Mom says to me. She packs 2 potato sandwiches in my lunchbox. "I don't want to eat the same tasteless potato sandwiches again. Please, just let me stay home for today," I plead. "I am sick of taking potato sandwiches to school every day." Dad walks in with his newspaper. "You have to go to school, Amna," he says. "You will be left behind if you miss school again." "But Dad..." "Amna, I will make something new for you in tomorrow's lunch," Mom interjects. "I promise." "We will order pizza when you come home tonight, all right?" Dad says with a smile and kneels down beside me. I picture eating pizza for dinner and give up trying to get out of school. I turn around to leave the kitchen when Dad calls me back. "Amna, I think you wanted to tell me something about school. I hope you're doing okay in your new grade 7 class." "We moved to Canada from Pakistan the year before. I've not been able to make any friends at my new school. Adjusting has been difficult. Nobody likes me or even comes near me at school. I haven't told Dad. He's been stressed out about financial problems lately. "Yeah, Dad, I'm fine," I murmur. I shiver in the cold as I walk to school. The wind keeps blowing my hood off my head. I struggle to keep it on. The closer I get to school, the more nervous I feel. I wish I lived further away. I wish Centennial Senior Public School was permanently closed down. I reach class on time and sit down at my desk in the back right corner near the wall. I sing along to O Canada with the rest of the class. The announcements begin. My heart pounds. I think of excuses to escape. I need to go to the washroom because I'm feeling sick. I need to go home because my mom is not feeling well. The announcements finish, and the bell rings to start the day. "Good morning, everybody," Mrs. Alex addresses the class. "For today's French class, I would like you all to form groups of 4 people again. I want you all to prepare a skit in French to perform for the whole class. The skit cannot be more than 5 minutes long. You have the whole period to prepare for it. We will perform the skits in tomorrow's class." "Mrs. Alex, can we pick any topic for the skit?" Zach asks. "Oh yes, the topic can be of your choice. I'm interested in your creativity." Everyone moves their desks around to form the groups. I look up from my desk. The students near me have moved. I sit alone in the corner. My heart beats even faster. I play with my pencil. I look at the clock. Only 7 minutes have passed since class started. I look around. A few students stare back at me. My face burns. No one likes me, I think to myself. I wish Mom and Dad had let me stay home for the day. Mrs. Alex looks at me. "Amna, can you come up for a second?" she says. Sarah and Nicole and some other girls have panicked looks on their faces as I make my way to Mrs. Alex's desk. They know what's coming. "Is there anyone who would like Amna to join their group?" Mrs. Alex asks the class. Students avoid eye contact with her. "Not again," somebody whispers. No one raises a hand. "Well," Mrs. Alex continues, "Sarah, I would like you to take Amna in your group for today's class. I'm sure you guys can work something out." "But miss, we already have 4 people in our group," Sarah says. "That's okay. I'm sure you can take in another person." Mrs. Alex motions for me to go sit beside Sarah. I walk towards her. Sarah raises her right eyebrow. Nicole hisses. No one talks to me or even says hi. They give me one line to say in the whole script. "Bonjour, madame. Comment ça va?" I sit with the group and pretend to belong. I feel like a loser. I wonder why no one likes me and why no one wants to be with me. What is wrong with me? I ask myself. I hold back the tears. The period finally ends. At lunch, I sit alone and munch on my potato sandwich. I think of eating pizza tonight. It somehow makes me feel better. When the last bell rings, I take my stuff out of my locker, find my MP3 player, and put on my headphones. I walk out the front doors and down the icy road in my big brown fluffy jacket. Someone once told me the jacket makes me look like a duck. Dad makes me wear it because it's warm. I hum along to my favorite song, Fly by Hilary Duff. And when you're down and feel alone, just want to run away, trust yourself and don't give up. You know you're better than anyone else, she sings. Someone suddenly kicks my butt from behind. I slip and fall hard on the icy road. My MP3 bounces away from my hand. I struggle to get up. Students look at me and some laugh. Senior kids high-five each other. Sorry, one girl from the group yells. It was a dare. Everyone laughs. I hide my face with my scarf and walk away as fast as I can. No one sees me cry.
That was One Day at Centennial, written and read by Amna Bhutta. In tonight's final story, the narrator, after hearing different versions of a story that has become family lore, finally gets to hear the whole story from whom it happened to, her grandmother. Let's listen now as Amna Bhutta reads her story, An Extraordinary Journey.
An Extraordinary Journey by Amna Bhutta. The cold winds whistled one morning in December. I wrapped my head with two woven scarves. I sat in the train with my friend Fatima. I was traveling from Rawalpindi to the city of Sialkot, Pakistan. I look up at Grandma speaking from her bed. Her back rests against the headboard. She stares at the white walls in front of her. I know the story. I have heard different versions from other people. Oh, so you're finally going to tell me that story? I ask. Grandma's mouth curls into a tiny smile. She looks at me. Yes, why not? I think you're old enough now. I get up from the love seat. I run to shut the bedroom door. I turn out the lights. I jump into the bed beside her. I hug her stomach and rest my head on her shoulder. It was 1972. Your father was in school during that time. I was coming home after a month away. I boarded the train. I looked out from the frozen window. Rawalpindi railway station buzzed with passengers. Some people stood and some sat on benches. The coolies carried people's luggage on their heads. The train horned. The wheels spun. Everything shook in our tiny compartment. I held on tight to the red sofa cover. The local youngsters raced with the train. They laughed and cheered. I worried for their safety. The train pulled out of the station. The wooden track creaked. The windows blurred into a white hue. I pressed my fingers against the window to form fingerprints. I prayed to get home safe. I missed my family. I rested my back against the soft velvet sofa. A man outside the cubicle said, "It is so cold outside. My fingers are frozen." Fatima told me to go to sleep. The train hustled. It was a bumpy ride. I fell asleep after a while. What happened next is something I can never forget. I woke up from a loud bang on our cubicle door. We were crossing the city of Wazirabad at the time. A man shouted, "Help! I need help!" His voice faded as he spoke. Fatima stood and held on to the steel railing of the upper berth. I rushed and slid the door open. I looked outside. Brown curtains drawn against the big window blocked the sunlight. Yellow bulbs brightened the corridor. A man in a white dress pounded on each door. He held a knife in his hands. He shouted, "My wife needs help. She's pregnant. Please help us." My grip tightened on the golden doorknob. The train's crew in black uniform gathered in the hallway. They tried to talk to the man. He cried and pleaded for help. The clock hung above the exit door read 10:23 a.m. The man looked at us. The train turned slightly to the right. The man lost his balance. He stumbled across the hallway towards us. We stepped back. "Please, you both are ladies. You can perhaps help my wife. She is in labor right now. Her father passed away yesterday morning. We're going to Sialkot for the funeral. Her due date was not supposed to be today. I don't know what to do. She is in extreme pain. Please, do something. Help her, please." His voice quivered. He spoke fast. Fatima and I followed him to his cubicle. The furniture was covered in green velvet. The beds were covered in white sheets. All the men in the cubicle left except for the husband. No female crew members were on the train. His wife moaned in pain. My hands shook. I never delivered a baby before. We laid the pregnant woman down on the lower left side berth. I placed a white pillow beneath her head. I lifted her legs. Fatima held her hands. I asked her to push. She pushed and pushed and pushed. A baby boy arrived after 10 minutes. The baby cried. I took the knife from the man, cut the umbilical cord, and cleaned the lady with several big pieces of cloth. There were no clothes for the baby boy. Fatima washed the baby in a tiny sink in a train's washroom. The washroom had no tub. The husband wrapped the baby in his white fur coat. We stayed with the poor mother for the rest of the way. The train's crew offered warm fluids and food for her in small steel containers. They cleaned the messy wooden floors and the white beddings. We fed her the food and wrapped her in a blue blanket. She looked pale and exhausted. I rubbed her feet. Fatima rubbed her hands. She rested on the lower berth. I sat on the wooden floor beside her. We arrived in Sialkot 4 hours later. The crew placed steps at the exit door to help the lady safely get off the train. The crew opened all the windows and blinds. The passengers formed a line near the exit door. I held the woman's hand. We departed the train before everyone else. Fatima waved at a donkey cart. The husband and wife thanked us and boarded the ride. We waved goodbye. We watched the cart disappear in distance. I never saw them again. I just hope the lady and the baby survived. I hope they are in good health.
That was An Extraordinary Journey, written and read by Emna Bhutta. This concludes Life Rattle number 1322. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Emna reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week to hear 3 stories by new Life Rattle writer Rob Redford.